This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Growing up a 98-pound weakling who was tormented by bullies in the schoolyards of Kansas, young Matthew Polly dreamed of one day journeying to the Shaolin Temple in China to become the toughest fighter in the world, just like Kane, his favorite 70s TV series, Kung Fu. While in college, Matthew decided the time had come to pursue this dream before it was too late. Much to the dismay of his parents, he dropped out of Princeton, traveled to China, and trained with the legendary sect of monks who invented Kung Fu and Zen Buddhism. The book is American Shaolin, Flying Kicks, Buddhist Monks, and the Legend of Iron Crotch, an odyssey in the new China. Author Matthew Polly joins us on the long line from New York. Good afternoon, Matt.
Hey, Coy, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Been looking forward to this. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
And the first place we just want to start is, where were you? I'm wondering how old you were and what was going on in your life when you first hatched this idea that you wanted to go to China, live in a Buddhist monastery and studying Kung Fu.
Well, as you in the introduction you put it out, I'd seen that TV show and sort of stuck in my head. I looked at Kane and he was David Carradine. He was as awkward looking as I felt, and yet he was totally bad. So I thought, you know, if you wanted to go and learn to be tough like that, you have to go to the Shaolin Temple because that's where Kung Fu started. That's where the greatest fighters on earth were supposed to be, according to all those Hong Kong Bruce Lee movies that I loved.
Yeah. So how do you go? What's the process? How do you go from a student at Princeton, and then all of a sudden you wake up one morning and you're literally training at this monastery?
Yeah. First, you have to really annoy your parents. What happened was I asked one of my professors, I said, I want to learn really real Kung Fu. And he said, are you sure? I said, of course. He said, are you afraid to churku, to eat bitter, to suffer? And I said, no, lying. And then I decided this had to be it. I'd asked, there's the Shaolin Temple. This was like a childhood fantasy. So I dropped out of Princeton and went back to my very Republican, Reagan-loving parents in Kansas and told them that I was not going to be going to medical school. I was going to go to China and become a Buddhist monk. They weren't happy. It turned out to be a long conversation. But the funny thing was at the time in 1992, no one had invented Google Maps yet, and no one knew exactly where the Shaolin Temple was. So I landed in Beijing with a map and went around and asked strangers where the Shaolin Temple was and eventually found it.
Wow. And if I'm not mistaken, we're talking with Matthew Polly. The new book is American Shaolin, and we'll be giving away a copy of this book at the end of the interview. Mm. If I'm not mistaken, when you got to China, it was not too long after the massacre at Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, it was only a few years. And so at that time, China's reputation then was basically what North Korea's is now, only with more people and better hairdos. So the idea that you would go there, you was still a really repressive communist government. And so it obviously made my parents nervous and made me a little nervous as well. But, you know, sometimes when you're 20, 21, you don't really calculate the risk the way you should. So at any rate, I did end up going.
Did you just, is it like where you hear some of these stories of these monasteries, did you go up and just have to sort of sit on the front stoop for a few months before they let you in and realized you were serious? Or did you just knock on the door and said, hey, I want to study Kung Fu?
Well, that's exactly what I was expecting, the former rather than the latter. I even packed a sleeping bag with me so I could wait outside the steps, because in the TV show Kung Fu, you wait outside for 2 months and they check on you and eventually you're the last one there and the abbot calls you in and he pours tea and you say, no, abbot, you drink first. And then he understands that you know politeness. That's how you get to be, as far as I knew, a Shaolin monk. But it turns out that the Communist Party had taken over the Shaolin Temple and were using it as a tourist attraction to make money. So when I showed up, they saw I was an American. They took me in the back room and they were like, if you got the dollar, son, we got a monk for you.
That's great. So what's the, did you eat bitter? Was it really tough training? I imagine it would have to have been.
I haven't ever done anything that tough. before or after. One of the funny things the monk said to me was, the first day he was looking at me and he said, "Have you done any kung fu before?" And I said, "Yes, I've done 3 years." And he said, "It looks like 3 weeks." So it really was like going from grade school to graduate school. It was the way the Chinese train, they have this kind of absolutist, the only way to be great is to start at a very young age. And so these young boys start and they train 6 to 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, 11 months out of the year. And all they do is kung fu.
Gosh. So did they get you up at like 3 in the morning to meditate and eat cold soup?
There was no electricity, so you didn't do anything until dawn broke because there were no lights. You wouldn't have, you'd have fallen off the mountain. But as soon as dawn broke, you got up and you ran up the mountain. You meditated in the morning. Then you had breakfast. Then you started your kung fu training. And then you had lunch, and then you went to sleep because you were exhausted. And then afternoon, after your siesta, you did more training. You ate dinner. Then you did more training. There's no TV. There's nothing else there. I mean, one of the great advantages of doing something like this is it's like band camp only for kung fu. All you do is kung fu every day, all day long. And I was there for 2 years doing it. And by the time I was done, I was a lot better than I was when I started.
I imagine so. We're talking with Matthew Polly. His new book is American Shaolin, Flying Kicks, Buddhist Monks, and the Legend of Iron Crotch, an Odyssey in the New China. It is a memoir of the 2 years that he spent studying at the Shaolin Monastery, which invented Kung Fu and Zen Buddhism. I got to ask you, Matthew, in the title you referenced the Legend of Iron Crotch.
Yes.
And there are pictures in your book of the Iron Crotch. Explain this to us. What is this?
And once you've seen the pictures, you're never the same again. So be warned to whoever wins this book at the end of the hour. The Shaolin monks had this idea that you could turn a particular part of your body as hard as iron through a repeated abuse. And each monk would specialize in a different art form. And so there was iron head, iron stomach. I trained an iron forearm, which involved banging my forearms against tree trunks every day for 30 minutes to an hour. And it felt like taking a hammer to a bruise. And then there was, of course, the most infamous monk, Monk Dong, as I refer to him in the book, who studied iron crotch. And he could take a full kick to the groin. And I know this because during a performance, they asked me to come up and kick him. And I kicked him, and the first kick, I could feel my foot bruise. And he looked at me like, "Is that the best you got, son?" So
oh,
I kicked him
Lord.
Again, and I felt my foot bruise worse. So the Iron Crotch Master was the real deal.
Oh, my gosh. So,
yeah.
So that's what they're doing in these monasteries in China.
That's what a few of them are doing. Most of the other monks thought he was kind of nuts, but he did have one great advantage, is that he had a large coterie of groupies who loved him.
I would imagine so, of course.
Yes, of course. Who wouldn't think that the Iron Crotch Master at the Shaolin Temple would have groupies? I must say I was shocked. And then he offered to teach it to me, and I thought, no, that'll get me stuck in a mental institution if they ever find out I'm doing that. So.
Matthew Polly's new book is American Shaolin, about the 2 years that he spent studying Kung Fu in China. Matthew, I'm curious what the other monks had to say or ask you about America. What are their thoughts, these young men who, you know, essentially grown up in a monastery, what were their conceptions of America or the West?
They had a few quirky ones. That this was 1992-93, so the first thing they wanted to know is if I personally knew Mike Tyson. And I, because at that point he was still the heavyweight champion, he hadn't bitten off anybody's ear. And then when I said I didn't, they were kind of concerned maybe I was lying about where I came from.
Because everybody
said,
knows
said,
Mike
you
Tyson.
Know Michael Jordan, because the NBA had gotten really big in China. I said, no, I don't personally know Michael Jordan. I know who he is. And then they were more concerned. And then after that, they really wanted to know about the differences, particularly they wanted to quantify it. Just how much does someone who drives a taxi make? Just how much does someone who works in a restaurant make? And since most of them made about $30 a month, the numbers, I would say, for an average American wage was so huge, they couldn't conceive of it. And I think it was, using dollars and cents was the way the Chinese tried to get to understand why there was such a dramatic difference between the lifestyles.
Was there any expression of interest to immigrate on the part of any of these monks?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Partly the abbot of the temple wanted some of the monks to immigrate to help spread kind of the word about Shaolin, because while it's very famous in certain circles, a lot of people in the general public have never heard of it. And so many of the monks ended up moving. There's a couple in New York City. There's one in Houston, several in San Francisco and L.A., as you might expect. But while I was there, the Communist Party officials didn't want the monks to leave because that was their bread and butter.
A nice little tourist attraction.
Exactly. They would perform. It was kind of like Branson, Missouri.
They'd
put on their outfits and perform for the tourist. So the first couple months, none of the monks would talk to me, and I didn't understand why. And it was because the leadership, the Communist Party leadership, had warned them against associating with me. And it was only through a long period of time before I became accepted and became the first American to become a disciple of the Shaolin Temple.
Matthew Pauly's new book is American Shaolin. His 2 years spent studying Kung Fu at a monastery in China. And then you, of course, joined them as one of these performers, right?
I did. From the first day, they wanted me to do it. But that was a little bit like, oh, look how funny the white guy trying to do
right,
Kung
right.
Fu. But eventually, the biggest event I sort of describe in the book is that a master from a different school came to the Shaolin Temple with some of his students and offered an open challenge, or asked for a challenge match against the Shaolin monks. And I was sitting at a table, and all the Shaolin monks were like, I'll fight him first. And then I didn't want to feel left out, so I said, I'll fight him, not assuming they'd take my offer up. And they turned out they did. And they put me in to fight the guy from the other school first in the first challenge match. And after that, that's when I was really finally sort of accepted by the monks.
There you go. Matthew Pauly is a graduate of Princeton University, a Rhodes Scholar. His writing has appeared in Esquire, Playboy, The Nation, Slate. He has earned a master's degree in philosophy and politics at Oxford, and he received the Lowell Thomas Award from the Society of American Travel Writers for his piece Brown Revisited in Slate. He currently works as a political affairs writer for The Nation and a travel writer for Slate. Matthew, if we could sort of look at the forest for the trees here, what are your thoughts on China now in the 21st century? I think, you know, when most Americans think of China, we still sort of think of, you know, a billion people and a big army and communists. And we think of a lot of new skyscrapers going up and, you know, a lot of pollution and coal burning power plants.
Sure. And all those things we think about are true. I think they're a bit of a distortion because the media tends to live in Beijing or Shanghai. So they see those extremes and they don't see what rural China is like, which is where I lived. And there's still an extreme form of poverty there. It's a weird combination. They called it socialism with Chinese characteristics, which really means a kind of capitalism with a one-party state control. But I think the most important thing for Americans to understand about China is the degree to which they have a chip on their shoulder, because they believe that over the last 300, 400, 500 years, they haven't received the respect they believe they deserve as one of the oldest civilizations on Earth. And so I think we'll see with the Beijing Olympics that it's really their coming out party. And one of the things America will have to deal with is a way to give China the respect it deserves without buckling under the pressure that they will try to exert as a new upcoming power. And that kind of combination is not going to be easy to achieve, but it's important not to either A, make them an enemy, or B, not resist when we should.
And of course, we'll just keep hoping that they keep buying our bonds.
We hope they keep buying our bonds and they make toys without lead paint.
Amen.
And various other things. One of the things I took away from living in China was the degree in which you watch. Napoleon has a quote about, don't wake China, because when the giant awakes, the world will shake. And watching China during this period, and what I tried to capture in the book, was the degree to which you could watch an entire nation wake up. And one of the things we're going to have to do is figure out how we kind of negotiate that relationship, because in many ways I think it'll be more important than Islamic fundamentalist Muslims. China, with just given its nuclear power and its 1.2 billion people, offers a bigger challenge and bigger opportunities than probably even the Middle East does.
Let me ask you a last question. Got about a minute left. Mm-hmm. Your book has been optioned. If I'm not mistaken, it's in production as a movie right now?
They are in development, which is one of those Hollywood terms for they've optioned it and they're working on it and you never know.
Right, right.
But they have it. It was a real honor for a first book to be optioned, and not that many true kung fu stories get made. But one of the things people always ask, because people are like, oh, you wrote a book, that's great. Oh, there's going to be a movie? Woo!
Yeah, yeah.
Is I don't think it's going to be Brad Pitt who plays me. But I do think, you never know. See, my biggest concern is they'll get Britney Spears. Because she's already shaved her head.
Right, right. So she's ready to go.
You never know who they're going to cast if they make the movie, and I certainly hope they do, because ultimately why I wrote the book and did this is because the abbot of the Shaolin Temple asked me to do something that was true to the lives of the Shaolin monks and how they lived. And so my journey is really a way to kind of explore what their lives were like.
Matthew Polly is the author of American Shaolin, Flying Kicks, Buddhist Monks, and the Legend of Iron Crotch, an odyssey in the new China. He's online at mattpolly.com. Matt, it's been an honor to talk to you. Thanks so much.
It's been a privilege to be on. Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.